You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday, and it is the 8th of November in the year 2004. And folks, I'm going to play Carl Klang's song for you. I need about 3 or 4 minutes here to get everything ready that I wanted to share with you tonight. So I'll be right back, and please don't go away, okay? Let me make sure this is coming on. I was trying to call WWCR tonight. If you're listening on shortwave, I'd appreciate it if you...
Now we can see the world coming into view.
I'd appreciate it if you would give me a buzz at 570-537-3025. Just one call will do. Of course, you don't know how many people may call, but... I had a call today from Lily, from a friend in Pennsylvania, and she was asking me if I could hear any of the shortwave stations. I tried 12.160, which is from WWCR, and it wasn't coming in at all. And then I got a call tonight from Don in Texas, and so I checked again, and on 5070, all I'm getting here in Pennsylvania is static. So if you're on shortwave, if you're listening and you can hear it, I would like a call, please. That is one of the reasons I'm a little late this evening. I've been trying to get through to WWCR to find out if there's a particular problem. I have information I want to share tonight that is, I believe, that it is just so important that I don't want our shortwave listeners to miss it. So stay here, and I'll put Carl Klang on, and then I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, okay? Thanks, folks.
A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order. The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
your ears refuse to hear. You turn your heart away from me each time when I draw near. Your eyes refuse to meet with mine. They glance away in fear. As if you should not look at your reflection in the mirror. How can I explain to you when you won't understand? You scoff me and you mock me and reject the truth at hand. You spread your vicious rumors all across this troubled land. You will fool me and knowingly transgress from his command. Your mind has been made of people by people you don't know. Thought machines control the scene so well it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain? Knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Every time I think about the damage that's been done, anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome. I want to tear the moon out of the sky and drop the sun. Why do I think so all alone, like I'm the only one? Even though your eyes are open, they may never ever see. Your mind may never comprehend this sinful subtlety. Your heart may never hunger for the truth that sets you free. Your soul may know the darkness of divine eternity. Like petty thieves who plunder in the shadows of the night, they break inside and enter through the windows of your mind. How can I control the poisoning of the soul? These lies that blind your eyes, blinded by the lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies?
All right, I'm back here with you, and thank you for your patience with me. I did receive one call from Missouri, from Will, and he said that it had been like that across the spectrum today, not just WWCR. He was getting the broadcast in, but very faintly, he said, or not good reception. So the possibility is that we will repeat this program if the reception clears up. Our internet listeners, of course, can hear it, but I want our shortwave listeners to be able to hear it, too. And we may repeat it tomorrow night if shortwave clears up. Once again, this is Monday, the 8th of November. And as you know, if you've been listening regularly, I actually haven't been live for 2 weeks since two Mondays ago. And so what you've had the privilege of hearing are the rebroadcasts of interviews that we did with Alan Watt towards the end of August and into the early part of September this year. We'll probably be having Alan back on with us live. But what I wanted to talk about tonight, actually, there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about with you. Peak oil. That's not going to be our subject tonight. But peak oil, this, if you're hearing about it on the news, I don't know if you're getting it on the news yet. Of course, it's all over the internet, how we're at peak oil. And that's what's driving the oil prices up, and it's all a fraud. And I've got some information I want to be sharing with you on that. And on Tuesday, was it Tuesday? Was that the voting day? I was thinking I should come on live. And then I thought about it, folks. And I thought, why? Why would we spend hours and hours and hours talking about a rigged election? And it was rigged, and we really didn't have a choice because, well, we did. We could choose either arsenic or strychnine because that's about the two choices that were given us by the creatures who control the elections and just about everything else in this country and in this world, including the mines. I'm so sorry to say of most of the people. But anyway, I don't know. We don't know if this is really over yet. Maybe it is, but I did. Nicole and I tuned in a couple times to check to see what was happening. And when they were bringing in the votes from the different states, and the guy came on from Ohio, and he gave this long speech about how it is so important after 2004 that every vote is counted, and that your vote does count. And so in Ohio, they had what they called provisional votes. I never found out what it was. They weren't absentee ballots. But they had 300 and some thousand, I believe, and they were saying that it was too close to call. And they said that they would not even be counting these provisional votes for 11 days after the election. Now, that was said more than once, and yet they turned around the next day and called it for G.W. Bush. But how are we to know what they're going to pull down the road? They may spring a surprise on us and say, my, all these provisional votes have given this state, I think New Mexico was another one, or Arizona, I can't remember. But there's a basic report here from Columbus, and I'm just going to share this quickly with you. This is from a lawyer, it says, who was there in Ohio. The title of this is Ohio Whitewash. A database of voter irregularities is reportedly being assembled, and hopefully there will be websites devoted to documenting what really happened. Well, there's a lot of websites already that are documenting what really happened, folks, but it's all more of the same. It says here, this attorney, he said, I worked for 3 days, including Election Day, on the statewide voter protection hotline run by the Ohio Democratic Party in Columbus. I am writing this because the media is inexplicably whitewashing what happened in Ohio, and Kerry's concession was likewise inexplicable. Hundreds of thousands of people were disenfranchised in Ohio. Well, I agree with, I believe that Kerry won this election by the vote. There were so many on the internet people, even these so-called Christians, Judeo-Christians, who were going to vote for Kerry just to get Bush out of there. And of course, all the Democrats would be voting for Kerry, but there were so many people who said they were going to vote for Kerry just to get Bush out. And I kind of had a thought, folks, that GW was going to get voted out. I thought that, and not that it makes a bean's worth of difference, because you have to remember that Bush and Kerry are third cousins, both skull and bone members, both part of the in crowd, quite up there in the in crowd. And according to information that came out of London, England, that Kerry has a whole lot more royal blood than George Bush does. In fact, supposedly the more royal blood than any other president before him, including George Washington. But anyway, I thought to myself when they were playing around with this, I thought, my God, they're going to get this evil creature back in here. And it's interesting to note your own thoughts or emotions, because I remember in 2000, I knew that George W. Bush was his father's son. I knew that all the presidents are puppets, and yet when it looked like Al Gore was going to win it, I was just petrified. And I thought, what difference does it make? But you see, there's something knee-jerk, I guess, that happens within us. And I think it's important that we do pay attention to what's going on with our thoughts and with our emotions. Anyway, I almost felt a relief when George W. Bush got it. Now, that's knee-jerk. That's against what I know intellectually, okay? And now, I felt the same way when they called the election for Bush. I felt that knee-jerk, oh, my God, they're going to get that evil creature back in. So all of us are susceptible to the games that they play, and we have to remember that they are games, folks. I'll continue this here with Florida. It says that people waited online for as long as 10 hours. probably in line, that might have been a typo. It appears to have only happened to in Democrat-leaning precincts, principally A, precincts where many African Americans lived, and B, precincts near colleges. Now, I am very clear that the heavy vote this year were a lot of young people coming out. Just a second here. Okay. Coming out because they thought that, I don't know what they thought, it's this war. They wanted the war over or something, but if they listened to the debates, Kerry never said he wouldn't have the war. He just said George Bush wasn't doing it right and he was going to do it right. So it really didn't matter, but I believe that all those, so many college students that came out to vote were voting for Kerry as an expression of their opposition to this so-called war on terrorism. Anyway, this goes on to say, he said, I spoke to a young man who got in line at 11:30 a.m. and voted at 7 p.m. 11:30 a.m. he got in line and he was able to vote by 7 p.m. When he left at 7 p.m., the line was about 150 voters longer than when he had arrived, which meant those people were going to wait even longer. In fact, they waited for as much as 10 hours, and their voting was concluded at about 3 a.m. The reason this occurred was that they had one voting station per 1,000 voters, while the adjacent precinct had one voting station per 184 voters. Both precincts were in the same county, and they were managed by the same county board of elections. The difference between them is that the privileged polling place was in a rural, solidly Republican area, while the one with long lines was in the college town of Gambier, Ohio. Lines of 4 and 5 hours were the order of the day in many African-American neighborhoods. Listen to this now. Touchscreen voting machines in Youngstown, Ohio, were registering George W. Bush when people pushed John F. Kerry all day long. This was reported immediately after the polls opened, and it was reported over and over again throughout the day, and yet the bogus machines were inexplicably kept in use throughout the day. This author keeps saying inexplicably, like it just doesn't make any sense, does it? I just don't understand it. And maybe there is a naivete here, or a lack of more information, more knowledge. He says countless other frauds occurred, such as postcards advising people of incorrect polling places, registered Democrats not receiving absentee ballots, duly registered young voters being forced to file all provisional ballots, even though their names and signatures appeared in the voting rolls. Those are the provisional ballots. Longtime active voting registered voters being told that they weren't registered. Bad faith challenges by Republican, quote, challengers in Democratic precincts, and on and on and on. I was very proud of the way so many Ohioans fought so valiantly for their right to vote and would not be turned away. Many, however, could not spend the entire day, were afraid of losing their jobs due to the severe economic depression hitting Ohio. I do not understand why Kerry conceded and did not fight to ensure that all Ohioans would have a chance to vote and for their vote to be counted. This is signed by Ray Beckerman. And it's a law firm in New York. So that happened in Ohio, and it happened all over the country. We can just be clear on that. And we do not have to spend hours knowing, do we? I mean, knowing more details, it's just truly, it becomes a waste of our time. All right. I wanted to talk about what's going on in Iraq. It took me hours. I haven't been pulling my email up regularly, and boy, it took me hours to do it. That computer just gives me fits sometimes. But here's one from the Boston Globe that says, Americans step up attacks against Fallujah. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, because I don't watch the news, so I have to do this phonetically. They closed the roads as showdown with insurgents looms. What's an insurgent? That would be one of us, wouldn't it, folks? If some foreign country came to America and started a war here to liberate us, anybody who wanted to protect their home country would be called an insurgent. So just remember that when you hear that word. An insurgent to them would be anybody who's giving them trouble. Here's one from the New York Times. All sides prepare for American attack on Fallujah. And there's an AP article also on it. This isn't new to the U.S. It isn't new to the United States. And what I'm going to do, there was one article that told about, I thought I printed it out, they're turning to God. The Marines over there, the soldiers over there, are getting baptized before they, and there's supposedly 10,000 U.S. soldiers surrounding. And maybe it's already started. As I said, I don't watch. Something happens to me when I turn on CNN. That's the only news station I get, actually. But when I turn it on, after about 5 or 8 minutes, something happens physically to me. It happens in my head, and it happens in my stomach. I get literally nauseous. I cannot watch it for very long at all. So if I am pronouncing that wrong, maybe you can let me know, because I don't like to mispronounce words. But you know what I want to do? Maybe tomorrow night we're going to talk about this thing more fully. But what I want to do tonight is share with you, and this is kind of tough because it's a great big huge book, and I'm probably going to knock a bunch of stuff off my desk. This is what I want to share with you is from HarperCollins' Atlas of World History. This is one that we picked up on the, geez, this has been several years ago. Chuck and I were shopping for Christmas, and I got one for Effie, and we got one for his dad, and I couldn't stand it. I had to have one for myself. But we got this big, huge thing for like $9.99. HarperCollins' Atlas of World History. This is where I got information because they've got information on the Jews and the diaspora, and it told about that, but this was very telling here. This is titled The Rise of the United States to World Power, 1867 to 1917. Now, you see, this is, of course, HarperCollins. This is written by them, and it's kind of like a brag, but it isn't pulling any punches whatsoever. The Rise of the United States to World Power, 1867 to 1917. They've got maps here. And it says here that the United States emerged onto the world stage in 1867, followed by Germany in 1870. Between them, these two imperial powers exerted a decisive influence in transforming the modern world. This is the good old U.S. of A., folks, that we were born into, believing, truly believing, that we were born into. Hello? Okay, I'm getting, isn't that amazing? I'm getting that problem going on again here. The U.S., I am convinced, without a doubt, Alan Watts said this several years ago, that that America, the United States of America, was developed to bring in the New World Order. Solely, that was the function meant of the New World, this New World, this country that we live in, that we were born in, that we always were so proud of. And Alan also said that when their plan is, this doesn't mean it's going to happen. We have to know that. We have to keep that in mind. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But their intention, according to Alan, is that, and they're doing it, bringing Americans to their knees, aren't they? One of them is by the high cost of gas, I mean, among a hundred other things, the loss of our manufacturing base here and all of the jobs and et cetera. But this phony baloney with this peak oil, that there's a possibility we could see gas at $7 a gallon, folks. In fact, you know, I had read this some time ago where the elite had said that the people in America, there is no reason. That was maybe when we were paying about 50 cents a gallon for gas and thinking it was high. But they said that there was no reason whatsoever that Americans should not be paying what the Europeans pay for gas. And I think at that time, Europeans were paying about $2.50 a gallon. That sounded out of this world to me. I couldn't even imagine it. And here, where we live, where I get the gas at the state line at New York, I'd have to drive quite a ways to get gas in Pennsylvania. So, it's a toss-up of what would be cheaper, but mid-priced gas, when I filled the car up a few days ago, was $2.18 a gallon, 19, and the high-priced gas was, I think, $2.27 a gallon. And Jeff stopped by. He said that his stepfather, who lives in Scotland now, was over to visit. He said that gas is $7 a gallon in Scotland. And this is all happening intentionally. And Alan said that their intention is to bring Americans to their knees and to destroy America. But it doesn't mean that it's going to. Let me get on with this, because we're going to be having, folks, we may be going off the air. I'm not saying this to sound like I'm warning you or something, but we're getting more behind on the airtime debt. And it just seems like there isn't enough interest. I don't know how many listeners we have. And I do know that shortwave is the backbone of this broadcast. But we very seldom get even a donation from our internet listeners. People want everything for free. And so there is a possibility we will have to be ending this broadcast. But before I do it, there were these things that I wanted to share with you. I'll be right back after this.
FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
Okay, in case you didn't get the address, I'll give it to you one more time. It is Jackie Petrou, P-A-T-R-U, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. I got the bill from, this is shortwave only, folks, and we're $9,000 in arrears. The bill is mine to pay. The debt is mine because you didn't contract for it. I did. And I just cannot let it go any further. Although, like I said, there's just a couple of other things before I do this. I have to go off the air that I want to share with you. I want you to hear this. Now, I'm back into, I'm going to try to quit editorializing so much. HarperCollins Atlas of World History. That's what I'm reading from. The Rise of the United States to World Power, 1867 to 1917. So they said that the U.S. emerged into the world, onto the world stage in 1867, followed by Germany in 1870. Between them, and you know, in 1870, who was in control of that government, don't you? And we know that they have been, the Jews, they call themselves Jews, have been in control of this country probably since the very beginning. If you haven't read Jewish Persecution, that's at our website at sweetliberty.org, you should. And if you don't read anything else, read section 12, I believe it is. That was blowing me away while it was being written. The influence in the early colonies, even Woodrow Wilson stated that the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, was based on the, how did they call it, Hebrew Parliament or parliamentary government or something. Actually, it's Talmudic law. It's exactly what it is, folks. And I've quoted this before, Moses Mendelssohn, who said that Judaism is not a religion. It is a law, religionized. And this whole program for world dominion, this whole plan is all, you can read about it in the Old Testament, in the first five books of the Old Testament. It is a political program wrapped in a cloak of religion. Anyway, so that was Germany in 1870. It says between them, these two, that's the U.S. and Germany, between these two imperial powers, between them, these two imperial powers exerted a decisive influence in transforming the modern world. In 1917, by entering the war on the side of Great Britain and France, the U.S. brought about a decisive German defeat and thereby made itself the world's greatest power. The preceding half century, from 1867 to 1917, was a period of intense international rivalries of which the U.S. took full advantage. American ambitions had manifested themselves since the 18th century, but dissension between northern and southern states, culminating in the Civil War of 1861 to 1865, slowed expansion to a halt. When the forward movement was resumed, industrialism and later finance capitalism appeared as potent forces superimposed upon the earliest type of empire building, which had stressed commerce and territory. Commerce and territory right out of the Old Testament, folks. The new imperialism vented itself in war against Spain in 1898, a watershed year when the U.S. plunged into world politics. Meanwhile, it had been strengthening its navy and occupying strategic outposts before claiming supremacy in the Caribbean and the Pacific. The first step, isn't it interesting hearing this from their point of view, folks? The first step in the resumption of this new forward movement was the acquisition of Alaska in 1867 as the result of a deal with Russia. To Americans, Alaska was both the back door to Canada and a, quote, finger pointed at Asia. To Americans, yeah, right. A finger pointed at Asia. Many Americans believed that British North America... Hold on a second. I have to get this book propped up. These pages are about 11 by 17 or bigger, and the book is very heavy. Americans believed that British North America encircled this... Many Americans believed that British North America, encircled in this way, would be forced into the Union, thus fulfilling the dream of a continent-wide empire. But the Canadians frustrated these hopes, first by Federation, 1867, and then by the purchase of Rupert's Land from the Hudson's Bay Company in 1869. Finally, they attracted Manitoba in 1870 and British Columbia in 1871 into the new dominion, thus blunting the northward thrust of the United States, British North America. Tensions with Britain stemming from the American Civil War were eased by the Treaty of Washington in 1871. With the Aleutian Island chain stretching out toward Japan, Alaska was the natural bridge to Northeast Asia. Since the mid-19th century, however, Hawaii had been the main entrepot to the Orient. A three-power rivalry involving Britain and France had kept American relations with the native kingdom, that's Hawaii, in an unsettled state. But by annexing Midway Island in 1867, the U.S. moved ahead of the other two powers. A commercial treaty in 1875 made Hawaii a virtual American protectorate. And in 1887, the U.S. obtained Pearl Harbor as a coaling station and future naval base. Annexation entered its final stage in 1893 when a group of sugar planters and Honolulu businessmen, aided by American officials, overthrew the native monarchy and established a republic. That's how they got Hawaii, folks. The outbreak of war with Spain in 1898 furnished the impetus for formal annexation. Wake Island followed in 1899. Earlier in 1878, a foothold had been established at Pago Pago in the Samoan group, where the British and Germans were also involved. Friction resulted in a treaty in 1899 partitioning the group, but the Germans lost their share to New Zealand in 1914. The chief fruits of the Spanish-American War in the Pacific, listen, this is the fruits of the Spanish-American War in the Pacific, with the Philippine Islands and the islands of Guam, formerly ceded by Spain in the peace treaty of 1898. The U.S. now had its stepping stones, that's in quotes, its stepping stones to China, already the focus of international rivalry as a field for capital investment. And they refer us to page 232, which I might take a look at tomorrow. Backed by the government, American bankers. Now, who are the American bankers, folks? Keep that in mind. Backed by the government, American bankers and entrepreneurs expected to get their full share. They would secure the open door, a phrase already in current use to describe the unlimited opportunities that China was supposed to offer. Well, it's doing it now, isn't it? A secret move in 1900 to obtain a lease over Samsa Bay in Fujian province opposite Formosa proved unsuccessful. Nevertheless, the U.S. was determined to outpace the European powers in the scramble. Its attention was concentrated particularly on Manchuria. Promoters like Willard Strait, who was the consul general in Mukden, conceived of Manchuria as America's new west to be gridironed by railways owned and managed from the United States. These designs were thwarted by Russia and Japan, who effectively divided Manchuria between themselves by treaty in 1907 and 1910. Boys, they did not like Japan either, did they? Huh? The other principal area of American expansion took in Mexico and the Caribbean. From Mexico, the U.S. had wrested the provinces of Texas, New Mexico, and California between 1846 and 1848. Land mining and oil companies, competing with European interests, penetrated the country after 1880, but were checked by the Revolution of 1911, which adumbrated a far-reaching program of nationalization. President Wilson reacted with two armed interventions, an occupation force to Veracruz in 1914 and a punitive expedition across the Rio Grande in 1916. But remember who was running? Well, Woodrow Wilson. It is said that his name was Wolfson, people. Think about that. So you see what these wars are all about? This is what I wanted you to hear tonight from the horse's mouth. President Wolfson reacted with two armed interventions, an occupation force to Veracruz in 1914 and a punitive expedition across the Rio Grande in 1916. But these actions stimulated the Mexicans to resist and help the initiation of a German intrigue, which came to a head in 1917. Meanwhile, the war on Spain in 1898 had led to the conquest of Puerto Rico, and the conversion of Cuba into a protectorate in 1903. Britain, the other power, chiefly interested in the Caribbean, recognized the changed situation, and in the Ponce Fault Treaty of 1901 gave the United States a free hand. From this agreement followed the building of the Panama Canal, opened in 1914 under the sole ownership and control of the U.S. The ideological basis for this hegemony was the Monroe Doctrine, which even when first set forth in 1823, implied an intention to treat Latin America as a United States sphere of influence. However, with the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861, expansionist ambitions were temporarily dropped, although the Monroe Doctrine was by no means forgotten. The French attempt to erect a puppet empire in Mexico 1862 to 67, offered it a fresh challenge. And in actually beginning work on a canal across Panama, the French engineer, Ferdinand de Lesseps, builder of the Suez Canal, caused further objections. As President Hayes put it, any such canal must be regarded as virtually a part of the coastline of the U.S. Well, folks, you are aware, aren't you, that today, well, of course, a couple or three or four, I don't know, several years ago, maybe it was five, I don't know, the U.S. turned the Panama Canal back over to them, and now both ends of the Panama Canal are controlled by the communist Chinese. So they've got their port in California, and at the Panama Canal, they have a shipbuilding port in the Gulf, and they have a bay in New York. So actually, in a sense, we're surrounded by the communist Chinese, aren't we? I'm trying to find my place again. Interfering in a British dispute with Venezuela over a boundary question, the U.S., through Secretary of State Olney, in 1895, declared itself practically sovereign on this continent, and the British dropped the argument. Obstinacy on the part of Colombia in failing to bow to American demands for canal rights across Panama led to an insurrection, accompanied by the forcible detachment of that country from Colombia. The U.S. then guaranteed the, quote, independence of Panama, but under terms that made it a protectorate. This period of dominance in the Caribbean survived under difficulties until about 1945. Mexican resistance stiffened into open defiance, 1934 to 1938. Tactics had to be altered to appease the larger South American countries. Intense diplomacy was undertaken to offset the activities of Nazi Germany. Interventions that occurred from time to time in the affairs of the Caribbean republics were covert or indirect. On the surface, the Monroe Doctrine was transformed into the, quote, good neighbor policy. Oh, haven't we been good neighbors, folks? Aren't you ashamed? Are you ashamed? I'm ashamed. We live here and we have been so blinded by the lies, haven't we? So blinded by the lies. So the Monroe Doctrine was transformed into the good neighbor policy. Well, you can read about that in the Old Testament. Jehovah tells his chosen, especially peculiar elected people, that they were to be good neighbors wherever they went. And then he turns around and tells them to utterly destroy everything that breathes when they entered a town. A lot of contradiction there, isn't it? Anybody who can believe in their heart that our Creator is a contradiction, it's double-minded, it's insanity. It has to be. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's just good old brainwashing, mind control. But you can read all about it in the Old Testament. A battle... I keep looking up at you when I'm talking, and then I lose my place. So the Monroe Doctrine was transformed into the good neighbor policy, and a battle of wits ensued to convince Latin America of U.S. good intentions. But obviously, new forces were at work, and the Monroe Doctrine continued to recede further into the background. I think that might be it. Just a minute. Yeah, that is it, folks. But they've got these maps here. the U.S. of America. And they've got, for example, they've got this little, these colored arrows, U.S. influence, and that goes over to Japan. It says, I can't do this because I can't get this book close enough. It's real small print. And then my mouth is away from the mic. But U.S. possessions, Midway Island in 1887. Midway Island was annexed to the U.S. The Hawaiian Islands, annexed by the U.S. in 1898. Pearl Harbor in 1887. Western Samoa. It became American Samoa in 1899. It was first colonized, I guess, by, or colonialized, is that what they call it? By Germany from 1899 to 1914. And then the green arrows are U.S. protectorates. Oh, we can't forget the Alaskan chain, can we? And military action by the U.S. in the Philippines, ceded to the U.S. after the Spanish-American War in 1898. And Guam, same thing. And now, remember what we were taught in school about that, the Spanish-American War, that they blew up the Maine. Remember that? Remember the Maine? Yeah, well, then they found out when they went to pull the Maine up from the bottom that, my, the Maine had exploded from inside out. It wasn't blown up by some enemy folks. It was the same thing that happened in every single war at Pearl Harbor, where they goaded Japan, not only goaded Japan, literally backed Japan right against the wall economically, and laid down ultimatums. In fact, if you want to see the final ultimatum that Cordell Hull laid down, you can see it at our website at sweetliberty.org in the section titled How Wars Are Made Behind the Scenes. There is no war. Can you think of any individual, any person who would want to go to war? Well, today, maybe today, because of the intense mind control that has been underway for so long, and today's soldiers are all victims of that, aren't they, folks? That is from the cradle right to their grave, conditioning them to kill and to follow orders. And it's a game, of course. You play enough of those video games where you're killing and exploding bombs. I have a sense that when they push the button from those planes, that they cheer when they've made a hit. And the more people killed, maybe the more cheering they do. It isn't real to them. It isn't real to them. Here's one. Why Bush will restart the draft if reelected. This is by Senator Tom Harkin. Senator Tom Harkin, a Democratic senator from Iowa. A major terrorist attack could easily serve as the pretext for setting the draft in motion. President George Bush may or may not have a secret plan to reinstate the draft, but this is besides the point. The deteriorating facts on the ground in Iraq, plus the Bush doctrine of acting, quote, preemptively and unilaterally against hostile regimes, will soon leave him no choice. If Bush is reelected, he he will have to restart the draft. Indeed, Bush has already... Oh, I'm going to stop here. I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, I won't be able to finish this, and I will be able to pick it up tomorrow night, and I want you to hear it. But I heard... I treated myself. It's a turntable. It's a small one, but it's a turntable where I can play my old albums, my old goodies, oldies and goodies, and also cassettes, and it also has AM, FM radio on it. So I've caught the news a few times listening to an oldies but goodies station. And here's the commercial I heard. Two young boys, teenagers, you can tell by their voices, still not real manly. And the one boy said something about registering for the draft. And he asked his friend, "Have you registered for the draft?" And the boy said, "No." He said, "Here's what he said: you have to register for the draft. It's the law." Now you see that just saying it just like that penetrates into any mind that's listening. A lot of people listening to those would be parents who would rush their children off as soon as they reach 18 to go sign up for the draft, right? But here's then what followed. If you don't sign up for the draft, he said to his friend, you aren't going to be eligible for that college grant. And there was another government grant that his friend wouldn't be eligible for if he didn't register for the draft. See how they lie? I'm going to. My. I must have set my clock wrong because it's 5 minutes till the hour, and I'm getting our 1 minute warning, and I don't know why. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Jackie. I'm trying to listen to the show, and it's just so awful. It sounds like you're underwater. I'm calling from New York State.
I know, Gloria. I don't think we have many shortwave listeners tonight.
Oh, my goodness.
No, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to redo the broadcast tomorrow if it's any better, honey.
And if anybody's listening out there, I would like them to call WWCR and complain to them.
I tried to get through, but I got a call. Folks, just a minute, Gloria. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. And thank you for joining us. God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. And good night, Gloria. I got a call from John and Kevin.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed